Hi, and welcome to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 51. We are here with Lou Cerny, the CEO and founder of New Relic. Hi, Lou.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. And my name is Gary Orenstein, host of the Cloud Computing Show. We will jump right into the industry news. Been about a month since our last show. There's been a lot of funding with cloud infrastructure startups. I've done some pieces before on infrastructure applications, but Nebula, I just saw. Notable just came out of quiet mode there. CloudBees got some funding. Lou, what's your take on the funding environment, particularly as it relates to these cloud infrastructure kind of startups?
Well, it feels like there's a real, for lack of a better term, gold rush going on. And I think what investors are broadly seeing is that there is so much change coming on with the advent of new ways to deploy applications and acquire compute, that the existing vendors are going to have a tough time capturing this market opportunity. So we're going to see billions of dollars move from traditional vendors to new companies. And investors want a piece of that action. So it's definitely an exciting time. There's a lot more promise than delivery right now. So I think there will be some great investment decisions made along the way, and there will be a lot that people will say, wow, I can't believe I invested in that, but it's way too early to tell which companies are going to fall in which category.
Yeah, but there definitely is a lot of activity, so we will do our best to stay on top of it, maybe have a few of the recently funded companies on as future guests. A week or two ago, Dell made a networking acquisition, Force 10. I don't know if you followed that at all. I've been following Force 10 for years. They were around quite a while, had raised a lot of money, made a lot of hoopla around the 10 gigabit Ethernet market. I'm still trying to figure out how much of this was, helping Force 10 out of a difficult situation or really strategic from Dell's perspective. But it does seem now that Dell has a networking infrastructure component. HP, of course, has what they've got with the 3Com stuff that they did, and of course their ProCurve line. Cisco has now got server and networking merged together. So it seems like that's the trend. The networking and the server is going to get... IBM is the only ones who don't have a networking component as far as the big server vendors are concerned. So
it's interesting when you list the big vendors, and IBM is the one that's lacking something as a systems vendor, but... the other thing that I've heard about Dell that is an interesting thing to observe is they're trying to transform to being a broader solution provider, but that definitely includes software, to my understanding. So,
right.
It'll be interesting to see how and if they can make that kind of transition.
Yeah, I think they've made a few smaller software acquisitions in the past. It'll be interesting to see if they do a big one, in the billion-dollar range. That'd
be a big bet.
Sometimes it's hard for companies to change their DNA to adopt to that. But they seem like they're doing well. I think it'll also help them as they try to build out their web scale and cloud computing business to have the server and the networking stuff to go together. I always say to folks, when people talk about scale out and cloud computing, there's sort of this imaginary field that just brings all these servers together, but there really is a lot of hard work to get the networking there. The other industry moving and shaking, VMware, of course, announced vSphere 5 and all of the new activity coming there. We'll see a lot more about that at VMworld. And then at the same day or around the same day, which is no coincidence because they're always fighting each other, Citrix announced their acquisition of cloud.com. So we'll see a lot more activity around that virtualization. Did you pay any attention to that announcement or have any thoughts on that?
In particular, the VMware announcement, there seems to be a lot of effort to understand the implications of their new pricing model.
Yeah, their VRAM licensing.
Right. It can be a mistake to just pay attention to the loudest complainers in a blog, because 90% of the people that take the time to comment are the people that often are the loudest, but not necessarily the most representative of the customer segment. But it's always a brave move for a company to change pricing model for a product with a large customer base, and you got to pay attention to just whatever VMware does in its core business. And then with Citrix, taking the open source play, they're always going to have a challenge fighting VMware, but I think they've got some interesting opportunities as they get serious with trying to build a cloud offering. It just shows that we're still in very early days.
Yeah. I keep wondering if Citrix is going to break out some of the Zen server and Zen desktop stuff from things like GoToMeeting and all this. Yeah. Seems like they got such a varied portfolio of businesses that I wonder if they're ever just going to do something there, but doesn't
yeah,
seem
maybe like EMC did by spinning out VMware
yeah.
several years ago.
I mean, on the flip side, you could say that VMware is reaching into other areas with their collaboration tools, and they bought Zimbra, and they bought, what was the presentation company? They bought Slide Rocket, something
yeah.
like that. So, well, we'll certainly see a lot at the end of August around virtualization, particularly with VMworld, so we'll keep our eyes on that. Well, let's jump into the guest Q&A. Really glad to have you here. Thanks for joining us. Not everybody knows your background, Lou, and where you've been and some of the things before New Relic, so maybe you could give the audience a little context leading up to starting New Relic and then tell us a little bit about the company and the products.
Sure. So my background, I have about 20 years of professional software background. Started at Apple as an intern in the dark days between Steve Jobs' 10 years. But I've always been an engineer focused on sort of the layer that's below the application, either operating system or something like that. I actually had a brief tenure at an enterprise software company called Hummingbird at the application layer, and that was in the mid-90s. And at that point, I was tasked with discovering this or evaluating this new technology that people had a lot of doubts about whether it was going to be viable or not, called Java. I tried it. Fell in love with it because previously I'd, been working in C++ and other languages that aren't very good for object-oriented, building, scalable object-oriented systems with large teams. And so I founded a company called Wiley Technology in 98 whose mission was, let's make Java manageable so that enterprises can be successful with it in production. And Wiley created a market, really, or pioneered a market called Web Application Performance Management. It grew to about 270 employees and 500 customers, 50 million or so in revenue, was acquired by CA or Computer Associates in 2006 for $375 million. And that was a great learning experience, a great ride. I had wonderful opportunity learning how to do startups as, starting the company up to hiring a professional CEO. I'd done it before after about 4 years on the job, and then serving as CTO for the remainder of the company's independent life, and stayed on for a year after the acquisition. So I took a year off after staying on for a year post-acquisition. And during my year off in 2007, I was asking myself, all right, learning everything I learned about Wiley and about application performance management, what would I do different if I were to do it again? Mm-hmm. And it was really just a mental exercise. I wasn't certain I was going to go into this business, but I just was noodling on this when I wasn't golfing or playing around with my daughter in my sabbatical. And anyway, that thought process has turned into New Relic. The trend that I observed in 2007 that New Relic started on was similar to the trend I saw in 98, a new platform, a new development community, this time centered around Ruby and Rails. So I started experimenting with Ruby, and my experiment with Ruby was what became New Relic. So what does New Relic do? Well, New Relic monitors not only Ruby, but virtually any web application in production, and we do it through a software-as-a-service model. So if your web app's written in Python or PHP or .NET or Java or a combination of any number of languages, we provide visibility into those live systems at a very deep visibility and very high granularity. And the trick is we do it with low overhead, so we don't slow down your app in production. So you run it all the time, and we're telling you minute by minute how fast your site is performing. And if it's not performing well, what's the reason for that? What are to the line of code? And this is the kind of software that once development orgs that have production apps and ops teams that have production apps, once they have this visibility, most of them conclude they can't live without it.
Mm-hmm.
My previous company, Wiley, as I say, pioneered this approach. Since it was novel then, and since we went to market with large sales forces going after big enterprises, we'd sell, $100,000 to $3 million deals to the top, 5,000 companies in the world. And we do it one 12-month deal at a time.
Right.
And, you know, customers would spend 9 months of, you know, thinking about evaluating and negotiating the software before they used it. So the contrast as New Relic is software as a service model where people can try it out for free. We have a free light product. We have 14-day free trial on the pro product. And you can become a customer for as little as $24 a month for a single server. And so it's a very small investment to get familiar with our software. And if you have a large environment, you can get comfortable at your own pace. If we're not delivering value to you, you can shut off the service at any point in time. So right. I think it's great that we have to deliver value every month. There is no shelfware.
Right.
You know, it's just if you're using New Relic and it's providing value to you and your application grows, then you're going to grow your investment in New Relic to make sure that it's running fast and the soft and your site is available and performing.
There's an interesting line there, which we've talked about with other guests on the show, is that this software as a service model is really in the best interest of both the provider and the customer, and that you're constantly reevaluating every month. Are you getting value? And if you are, great. And if you're not, you have the option to choose to end the relationship if need be.
I love that. And because what it forces the vendors to do is compete on the merits of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Right, as
not
opposed
the
to
merits
competing.
Of the sales cycle or the
salesmanship. Yeah, or how great is the steak dinner that I take the decision maker to last week, right? And so we want to compete in the playing field of providing the best service, which in our market means awesome visibility, great presentation of the data, very easy to use, very easy to get up and running, highly available service that is responsive. You know, we eat our own dog food, obviously, and monitor our own stuff. That's the stuff that matters to our customers,
right?
And of course, providing great customer support and all the other factors that are involved in making your customers successful. And I just think that's a better thing for the technology world if those are the factors that determine the winners and losers.
Yeah. It would be nice if that was ubiquitous. I don't think we're quite there yet.
But I think the future is going in that direction.
Well, that's the advantage, I think, of this cloud computing shift is that it's making more things more accessible to people on the front lines.
Yes.
Right? This whole idea of the democratization of choice, right?
Yeah.
That somebody who's on the front line with a credit card could sign up for your service or even use the free service without having to get 7 layers of approval.
Right.
And there you go.
Right. I mean, if you look at user interfaces for software built in the late 90s, it's pretty clear that the buyer never used the stuff that they wrote out $1 million checks for.
Yeah, you don't even have to go back that far.
No, you don't.
Yeah. So that gives us a good idea of the application monitoring side of your business. I want to dig into a little bit more detail on that later on in our discussion. I was on your website last night and saw that you also have a real user monitoring capability.
Yes.
Which would be different than if I'm just monitoring sort of my core application code. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the history of New Relic has been putting visibility into the live code that's running on the server.
The web application.
Yeah. And because we're inside the web application, we can also see how long it takes for the database to respond and other things too. So it's a very important piece of system to monitor. It's kind of the heart of the whole system. But at the end of the day, what this really matters about is, are my page load times fast for my users? How long does it take for the data to get on the screen and for the user to feel like the site is satisfactory to them? And historically, if you look at the history of our general space of IT management or monitoring or whatever you want to call it, companies have decided to solve the problem of improving the capabilities of the product largely through acquisition or cobbling together partnerships or disparate products and disparate teams. And the result is products that rarely work as advertised. So what we decided was we're going to extend the visibility of New Relic all the way from the application to the browser, but we're going to do it in one product, and we're not even going to raise prices. We announced this on May 17th, and now New Relic monitors every page load of every customer that hits our customers' applications. All of our customers need to do is turn it on and say, I'd like to enable real user monitoring.
And so this is something that gets enabled if I'm doing, for example, just using an Apache web server. It's something that plugs in there on the server side. Yes. It plugs
into the application server itself. So if you're using Ruby on Rails, the way we gather our visibility is through a little agent that you install on the application server. And that agent now knows how to insert JavaScript into the page to measure the page performance. Not too dissimilar to how Google Analytics measures, you know, different metrics, but we're using a similar approach. Because it's so easy to use and because there's no added cost to it, we're now at the stage where over 3,000 applications have turned it on, and we monitored 2 billion page views last week alone.
Wow. So I just want to dig into the technical stuff here for a second because it's interesting to me. The you're saying that the New Relic code will essentially auto embed a little bit of JavaScript into a page that gets loaded on the client side, mm-hmm. and then that JavaScript will feed back some of the details.
Yes.
So there's actually you're not actually modifying the browser or there's no nothing on the client side that actually has to happen whatsoever. So there were companies years ago that were doing end user monitoring that would require special browser plugins and all this kind of heavyweight client side stuff, which isn't needed anymore.
That's right. We're looking at 100% of the real user transactions that hit our customers' apps.
Yeah, that's really neat.
Cool. And reporting every minute.
Right. And like you said, in the same product, so it's not...
Right. And drilling down to the line of code, if the page views slow down to 10 seconds, it's because the database slowed down. We'll tell you the line of code that's calling the bad statement.
Right. So to put this in the context of a few customer examples, give us a couple of color commentaries of folks that you've worked with, either by name or anonymously by industry, that would resonate with the audience.
Well, I think one of my favorite customer stories is because it speaks to the product being easy to use and install and more consumer-like in terms of focusing on something that anybody can walk up to and use. So my favorite story for that is a company called Mercado Libre. Not many people may have heard of Mercado Libre here, but Mercado Libre is based in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and they have complete dominance of e-commerce and auctions and payments. So think eBay, Amazon, and PayPal, all for Latin America, South America. So it's in a public company, it's a big business. They discovered New Relic on April 4th of this year. They signed up for a free account. And in enterprise software world, what would have happened is we would have, either said, we can't service you because we don't have any people down there, or we'd fly someone down to Buenos Aires to give a PowerPoint to explain to them why they should evaluate the software, and then they'd go through a six-month evaluation process. We'd do eight more visits, and we'd negotiate a
$2
million deal, and sometime in the middle of the next year, they'd start to realize value. Contrast that with what happened with New Relic. They signed up on April 4th. By April 12th, they had 200 servers and 83 applications or services instrumented and monitored in production, self-install, despite the fact that nobody in our sales or support org spoke any Spanish. and they deployed on a significant portion of their environment. And 3 weeks after that, became a large customer of ours. And now they're on over 1,000 servers, and all of this complex, large, think of it at Amazon for South America and Latin America, is monitored by New Relic. And they have over 100 people that use New Relic every week.
And, that's great.
And what did New Relic have to do to make that happen? Well, we had to build an amazingly useful and easy-to-adopt product. But what we didn't have to do is fly down consultants to educate them on how to use it. We didn't have to take people out to steak dinners. We didn't have to have CIO golfing outings to make all this decision. As a result, our product is a fraction of the cost of lesser products that are on-premise. And so we're giving them amazing value at maybe 20% of the cost of what, an on-premise software, and we're doing it in a way that makes a good profit for us too.
Yeah. I mean, you've blogged a bit about sort of this new kind of sales model,
right?
And which I think there are a lot of people doing it. Not mm-hmm. everybody's done it as well as you guys have. Give us some of your lessons learned, or maybe some guidance for people, because I think most folks in the cloud computing arena, particularly folks who are doing new infrastructure applications, software as a service, want to get in this direction. What would be some of your guiding principles?
Sure. So, you know, a good time to ask about it because we had some clarifying thoughts about what are the things that we kind of like about our model and the core tenets of it. There's a couple things about our model. And it's not that we have a zero sales model. In fact, you know, most of our revenues involve people having some interaction with our inside sales force. But we have a small number of salespeople. We have, you know, north of 1,500 paying customers. And 2 months ago or 3 months ago, we had 5 ramped reps, right? So how do you get that many customers? It's got to be totally different from the 3 deals a quarter enterprise rep that has dominated enterprise software in the past 15 years, 25 years. So here are the tenets. Our sales reps sell to people that are already using the product. Mm. Product bears responsibility for getting the customer aware, educated, and ready to have a commercial discussion. So this is not a, let's glue an interesting business model onto an existing product. It's more, let's build a whole company around a business model that worked, and that means a lot of product effort. So that the product is not only responsible for performing well after it's fully set up, but also, you know, it's onboarding the customer, getting them from...
Yeah, so now when the salesperson doesn't have to educate.
That's right. And I think that's natural for consumer internet companies and a foreign thing for most enterprise software companies.
Yeah.
They rely on consultants to do that for them. So that's one thing. We sell to people who are already using the product. We don't customize the product, right? You know, there's no matter how big the account is, there's one New Relic. Just like Apple doesn't customize iPhones, even if a company decides to buy 12,000 of them. It's still, you know, the power switch is where the power switch
is. You can put an app on it if you want, but it is what it is.
Yeah, we resist that urge as well. And we focus on fewer features that solve the problem, and we resist the urge to add more features as we get bigger and as more and more customers ask for more stuff. So it's, you know, the less is more design philosophy that it takes a lot of discipline, but, you know, it served us well in the past.
Yeah, neat. I want to jump back for a second. You mentioned there's a free version and then a paid version, which is licensed on a per server basis. What do you get when you start, and what do you get when you pay? And
sure. So we have our free version is New Relic Lite, and that includes visibility of the application layer. You know, it'll tell you for every one of your web transactions, think if it's Ruby, it's a controller, or if it's in PHP, it's a specific PHP function or page. So what are the busiest, what are the slowest, which ones take the most of your total time, and then how do they break down? Oh, you're spending all your time in the database, and it's this particular function in the database. So it's pretty deep visibility in a free product. And it has free real user monitoring. So we're talking about a pretty powerful free product. So what's the catch, or what do people pay for? It's a real-time monitor. So it'll tell you how you're doing right now and in the last 30 minutes. But if you want to see how that progressed yesterday, then you can go to our basic product, which will show you the last 7 days. And some more pages, more granular visibility. And then our pro product goes indefinitely. You know, you can go back for high-level trending data for as long as you've had your account. And you go much deeper. This is where you get to the line of code to understand, you know, what in specific is causing the problem that a developer could use to debug pretty much anything. So those are the three layers. Your Lite product, you can deploy on as many servers as you want.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it for as long as you want, and you don't have to worry about ever getting a bill from us.
Is it possible to combine? Do people have both? Do they have areas in their environment where they'll use the free product, and then other areas where they'll use the paid product? And I'm guessing there probably isn't a unified view at that point.
So customers can create two separate New Relic accounts and say use the basic product in a staging environment and the pro product in production, for an example. And we do make it easy to toggle between the two.
Gotcha.
But it doesn't make sense to, you know, for one application. In a production environment, say that makes sense in one product now and one New Relic account, and that New Relic account can actually support multiple applications. So that Mercado Libre case, their one New Relic account supports now over 220 application services. Some other customers break them into multiple accounts that map to Teams.
Gotcha. I'm curious if you could go into a little bit of detail about how do you call it an agent that you provide? Yeah. How that actually is gathering information from specific applications. What are the hooks? What are the things that it's tapping into? And how much work is it to customize that across all the different languages? And then do you package that all up in one agent that is deployed? Right. Yeah, just a little bit about how that
No, this works. Is a lot of the secret sauce of the company, yeah. But in fact, it's not secret sauce, so I'm happy to share it. But it goes all the way back to the founding idea of Wiley in 98, my first company, where Wiley, the aha moment was, what could you do with Java bytecode instrumentation? And to educate you on what that is, that's basically Java programs are packaged up in jar files. Inside those jar files are little bytecodes that have the instructions to execute. And Wiley pioneered an approach to modifying that Java program so that, let's say, for example, the method that calls the database. We could put a little tracer around that method that if the database call takes 5 milliseconds, well, the act of measuring it would be far less than 1 millisecond. So we can just measure important things like that and servlet invocations or calls to external web services, the kind of granularity that people want to see in production. We can do that at very low overhead, and we don't require our customers to modify their source code. We can just take anybody's jar file and we can instrument it. And Wiley, became a nearly $400 million value company by doing that really well and presenting the data in a pretty good way. So what New Relic has done is said, well, let's focus on not only the visibility, but making it so that data is really synthesized in amazing analytics. So you know what data to pay attention to and how to make it so it's very easy for someone to walk up to a fresh New Relic install and analyze and identify hotspots. So the way our agent works is Java bytecode instrumentation, but in Ruby we use method aliasing, and in PHP we do stuff at a lower level looking at dispatch tables. It varies by language,
sure.
But the different agents, so we have an investment in each one of our platforms, .NET, PHP, Ruby, Java, and Python, and you can expect us to invest in more agents in the future. But they all share a common protocol to our service, talks HTTPS, so it's very firewall friendly, and they send the same type of data.
Mm-hmm.
But it's it's part of what makes what we do not easy.
Sure. You obviously see a lot of folks who have built great performing applications. Mm-hmm. You've seen folks who have built not so great performing applications, maybe helped them get along the way. Do you have some general recommendations for folks who are maybe starting with a little bit of freedom, some design principles or guidelines that in anticipation of wanting to use New Relic would make the onboarding process easier? Going back to the application development, does the question make sense? And are there any easy answers there?
Well, I mean, this sounds very self-serving, but it is definitely true. You got to measure it ideally in production early, early on in the life cycle when you go live. Yes, and load testing makes sense for some apps, but sometimes, guessing at what production load looks like is so hard sometimes it might make sense just to measure production. But try not to make dumb mistakes like calling the database 1,000 times to render the home page. But then because of new frameworks like Rails, you may not know that what looks like a very innocent method call is a four database round trip time, right? This is the benefit, but the drawback of high-level...
The abstraction.
Abstraction layers, you don't know what's going on behind the page, so you need the measurement to tell you what you thought was cheap is really expensive. And then the flip side is you may be doing something you think is expensive but turns out to be cheap in the grand scheme of a page load. So measurement is important, but as we move to more of a service-oriented architecture, to use the buzzword of 5 years ago, but just, you're integrating services that could be within the same environment or across the cloud, be mindful of how chatty that is and make sure, try to batch up. Don't ask if you're integrating with Salesforce, don't ask for one account at a time when you can ask for 4,000 accounts or whatever the batch size is. So that's where the design thought up front is good, is design your integrations with external services or the database or what have you so that the they're not too chatty. And then beyond that, I'd say just measure and iterate.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than try to the last thing you want to do is is spend the first 8 months of your company thinking, well, what happens when I'm at Twitter scale? You got bigger problems than
right.
that. You know,
that'd be a great problem to
that'd
have.
Be a great problem to have. So just get something out there, measure and iterate, and just keep an eye on your performance over time.
Great. Is there anything you'd like to share with the audience for things to watch for, you know, areas of, new activity for New
sure.
Relic or anything we didn't talk about?
Well, you know, our vision is that ultimately New Relic, we'd like it to be the single tool you need to just be successful in production with your web application. All the visibility you need, so you don't need to go to other tools to answer questions about the performance of your whole environment. So that's why real user monitoring was so important. We
mm-hmm.
wanted to, you know, complement our in-app visibility with what's going on in the browser. The next step we're going to do there is you can expect us to deliver before year-end server monitoring for free. So that'll be great. That means that people in the same New Relic product can go from a web application running on 20 servers to showing you how those 20 servers are doing, how they're
no,
doing
lower
CPU,
level server stack. Okay, CPU, memory utilization, all that
stuff. And the cool thing about having it all in one product is you can now answer the question, oh, the server is running hot on CPU. Well, it's kind of like the tree falling in the forest. We can also see whether or not that actually matters to the customer.
Right.
Right? So page load times aren't being impacted by that. So yes, I should be aware of the CPU load or load problem or memory problem. But if it's not dinging service levels, I don't necessarily need to take this other thing off the critical path to fix it right now, or maybe I do.
Right.
So having it all in one product makes it so much easier to make informed decisions as to how to fight your fires and how to prioritize your time and how to put how much resource to, you know, an infrastructure to put into your application. So we're going to give that away, just like we gave away real user monitoring, and that's because we believe that by providing a compelling tool that, I was telling my product team last Monday, I said, our goal is to overwhelm our customers with awesome so that they feel like, hopefully, if New Relic is doing its job, it's a no-brainer to put it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to do.
Neat. Well, that's a great summary. Thanks very much. I hope the audience found that few of those tips and tricks as enlightening as I did. Let's move on. Some of the other sections of the show, we often talk about upcoming shows. I mentioned early on, VMworld is coming at the end of this month. We just had OSCON, so there's a lot of activity. Were you up at OSCON yourself? Or
I wasn't. Ironically, we have a large R&D org in Portland, but I'd just been up there not too long ago, so I missed it.
Yeah. So I think that between that and an upcoming VMworld, that's probably the bulk of it on the show side.
Mm.
Let's jump into cloud tips, where we try to provide a company or service that we find interesting and relevant to the cloud computing arena. Could be business, could be personal as well. I got a personal one, but I'll let you go first with your cloud tip of the show.
Sure. So an interesting company that has been in the market for less than a year, I'd say now, is Loggly, which is a complement to the visibility we provide, measuring response times, things like that. Quite often, there's a bunch of wealth of information in your log files, and managing and searching those log files and collecting them is always a pain. And so Loggly is doing that in a SaaS model, and I think it's a nice complement to us. So since our company is all about web apps in production, I figured that's one to mention as an interesting complement to what we do.
Yeah, and if any of the folks in the audience missed it, we did have a show with Loggly. Oh, I think it was maybe early in this year or late last year. so I'll put a link to that in the show notes so folks can take a look at that as well. Yeah, they've come a long way and it seems like really exciting. I'm going to flip to the other side and do a consumer cloud application, which is TripIt, which I've been doing a lot of travel recently. And at my company, we use Concur for our corporate travel. I know a lot of people have strong opinions about that, but we won't go there. But I've just started using it, and boy, when you can't remember what car you rented, what hotel you're going to, what flight you're on, it does seem to provide a pretty valuable service once the travel schedule gets pretty hectic. So if you haven't tried TripIt, give it a shot. If those of you who do have a corporate travel with Concur, it seems to link quite seamlessly. And of course, they have ways to pull things in from your email and everything else there. So
yeah, I got to say, I can't live without it. I mean, just before we started this, I just forwarded two emails and a TripIt, and now my itinerary is all set. And
yeah,
ugh, and then you get to the airport, you fire up your iPhone, and then you've got all the details there. It's like, ugh, my admin has less to do now, because I've got Trifid.
Yeah, so it really does seem to work. So I've become a big fan. Thought I'd recommend that to folks if they haven't tried it. Well, that's a wrap-up for this show. Lou, where can people get info about New Relic, yourself, web addresses, Twitter addresses? Share what you would like to share with the audience, please.
Sure. We're at newrelic.com. That's newrelic.com. Would love to have you come visit. And, of course, if you've got a web app, honestly, I'm not overstating this when I say this is a two-minute process to get visibility. And there's no cost involved. There's no credit card to sign up. So you owe it to yourself to give it a shot and put the visibility in. And we'd love the feedback. And then I'm on Twitter at Sweet Lou, which is just a nickname that some drinking buddies gave me in college that I'm stuck with. So anyway, Sweet L-E-W on Twitter. It's been a real pleasure, Gary.
Yeah, great. Thanks. And for me, you can find me on Twitter on occasion at just Gary Orenstein. You can also find the Cloud Computing Show page at thecloudcomputingshow.com. You can email us with suggestions or comments at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. We also have a Cloud Twitter address, which we use just primarily for announcing shows. That's at twitter.com/cloudshow. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Just do a quick search for The Cloud Computing Show in the podcast directory, or if you go to thecloudcomputingshow.com, we have a direct iTunes link on the top right of our homepage. That's a wrap for this show. We will see you again at VMworld. We have a big roundtable planned, lots of special guests. If anyone in the audience is going to be in Las Vegas for VMworld and would like to join, send us a message to our email or to our Twitter. We'll try to see if we can find a way to have a little get-together. Thanks again for joining us, Lou.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.